Welcome to Mighty Parenting, the podcast with real, raw, and relevant talk about raising teens and parenting young adults. Here are your hosts, Judy Davis and Sandy Fowler.
Welcome to Mighty Parenting, a community where we help you raise teens and parent 20-somethings so they can become happy, successful, and emotionally healthy adults. I'm Sandy Fowler, and today I am here without my sidekick. At the time that we're recording this, Judy just got to Texas a couple days ago, and she needs to be 100% focused on getting her husband settled and helping him and work with his team to get rehab going and the pain management. And if you're sitting there going, what on earth are you talking about, Sandy? Big, huge story, long story. We're not going to do it on every episode. So if you are in our private group on Patreon, go there. We posted, you know, the big story of what happened, and we post updates in there. Just go to mightyparenting.com/support, and you can find out how to become more involved, how to find out what's going on with Judy and all of that. And people have been asking, how can we help her? How can we support her? Well, there are other things that are floating around out there on Facebook and stuff, but she's also stressed about missing out on work because obviously she is spending a period of time not working at all in 6 to 18 months. We don't know what's going to exactly happen. So help me out. Do a little bit of Judy's work and share, like, comment, tell people about the shows, because the posting on social media and that, a big chunk of that was hers. And it just won't get done because I can't do everything. So thanks so much, though, for sticking with us, for being here. We are continuing conversations. We have great conversations. We have great guests. And today we're going to be talking about when our child struggles, and when then the family struggles, and we have to do the really hard thing, even when it's right for our child, and that can feel like when you do something that's really hard in the parenting world, I think a lot of times we just feel like we're really alone, but we're not. We've all had difficult parenting moments. We have all been there, and we've all had times where we had to follow through on something difficult. Yes, to varying degrees, but still difficult. And that can feel like we're letting our child fend for themselves, or like we're abandoning our child, even though that isn't the case. You know, we have those moments where we do this, and then we feel judged by other people or other parents. And I still remember, oh my gosh. So let's see. I think there was the winter when my daughter turned 2, and we live in Michigan. So we have snow and we have cold, and she refused to wear anything but sleeveless summer dresses through that entire winter. And so although I bundled her up when we're outside so she wouldn't get frostbite, and I talked to her pediatrician about whether this was safe, the judgment and the rude comments, every mom and grandma out there thought it was their duty to educate me or give me dirty looks when she'd be, you know, running around the big box store in her little dress. Again, in her 20s, you know, well, first of all, in her 20s, she still runs around in short sleeves and sometimes shorts in the winter. So she's just a warm human being. She was too hot dressed up like the rest of us. But in her 20s, we again did something that was a difficult choice. And that was that she took a year off of school. She risked losing her great scholarship and everything, but she needed that time to take care of herself, to tend to her mental health. And people weren't as vocal about this as they were when she was little because, well, for one thing, it's not quite so obvious other than the, oh, what's she doing home, you know, in the middle of the school year. But there was still definitely judgment about that. And it's frustrating and it's hurtful and it's isolating. And so that's why I am really looking forward to today's conversation. Our guest today is Amy Carey, and she knows the situation really well. She is the mom of a daughter who struggled, and she has become an advocate for families in crisis. She hosts a blog and a podcast, and she has gone to Congress to plead for change. She has worked with many alternative treatment facilities and many different families. She is passionate about helping families and is here to share her story and some of the things she's learned with us. So Amy, thanks so much for joining me at Mighty Parenting today to chat with our community.
Thank you so much for having me, Sandy. I've been very excited.
So Amy, Judy and I have been, you know, we've talked about your story and what you're doing, and we've listened to some of your podcasts. I'm still working my way through it. And first, I just want to say, we appreciate your courage because it can be scary to share some of the intense struggles like you have gone through, to take that out and just share it with the world. You know, there can be that fear of judgment for you, or even more so in this case, like for your daughter. You know, we get that little fierce sense of protectiveness that we want to put around our family. And there's so many things that could have stopped you, but you didn't let it. And your story is so inspirational for any parent who is struggling or facing difficult choices, even when they aren't the magnitude of yours. So
oof, you're giving me chills. Thank you.
Well, you're going to get plenty of chance to work through those chills here, because we're going to go through so much here. Let's start with your daughter's struggles. You know, when she was young is when, you know, I kind of came in and started hearing about what was going on. So when she was young, what was happening and how did it feel to you at that time?
So, you know, she is from my first marriage, and my first husband definitely struggled with some pretty clear emotional and mental issues. And, you know, I was so young, I think I was just really ignorant as to what that meant in the long run or how that really would pan out. I had Violet when I was 27. And, you know, in the beginning, she was just kind of this like little feisty character. And she was really independent. She was a leader everywhere she went. She was not afraid to be around anyone different. She made friends really easily. And, but she always kind of had an edge and was always irritable. I mean, when I look back, you know, we were mentioning retrospect, but when I look back now and think about the differences between my experience raising her as a baby and an infant versus my other children now, not that one was better or worse, it was just more difficult because she was just very different from the get-go. And she had a clear issue with men, which I also thought was really interesting. And my dad would constantly make comments like, every time I see her, it's almost like I need to start over again and begin my relationship with her again. And then she finally warms up and then I leave and I don't see her for a couple of days. And it's like, I'm starting from scratch again. So she always kind of had a baseline of irritability and edginess. I think that's probably the most accurate word I can use. Like, it just felt like a little gritty. Like, even the happy points were edgy.
So is that your view looking back, or at that time, is that how it looked to you?
At the time, she definitely felt like that to me. I just don't think I had any perspective because I was so young and it was my first kid, you know? Mm-hmm. I think when I had my second daughter was when I really was able to realize how different they were. And I felt maybe like I should have recognized some red flags.
Well, we always see that in hindsight. You and I were chatting before we even started today, and we're talking about things I was sharing, you know, some of the things I went through with my daughter, and, you know, when I saw things, but I didn't know that's what I was seeing, or
right.
You don't fully admit it, because even if it is what you're seeing, you don't have a clue what to do about it. And it's just such a different world. So at the time though, you actually, what you had was a child who had some great qualities, like you said, feisty and independent and a leader, but was definitely edgy. Was she difficult at home? Was it just difficult? Were there difficulties getting close to her, having a relationship with her?
I mean, I'm going to say even from like super baby zone, she just had a hard time laughing. She didn't laugh freely as I saw other babies doing with their parents. So that to me was like, okay, why is she just not like a giggly, happy kid? I'm a really positive person and like full of energy. And so it just was such a disconnect from what felt natural to me. And as she grew up and, you know, like kindergarten, I think she was still very, independent and all those great qualities, vivacious and energetic and enthusiastic. However, around first grade, I think it started to turn and I realized like, oof, maybe that's not okay. Like, maybe she needs a little help with that. And at the time I had gotten together with my second husband, who I knew from my childhood. And, you know, she was very difficult with him too. And And I mean, I was trying to think in my mind how I would describe her tantrums, because they were not typical kid tantrums. She never like rolled on the floor, threw her limbs about and screamed, freaked out over not being able to get a toy or something like that. It was more almost as if she needed to be heard. And if she didn't feel like you were hearing her emotions, she would continue to repeat herself and be unable to stop herself from talking. I remember turning around in the car while we were driving and saying, "Violet, you have to stop talking. We're done with that conversation. It's over. We've already resolved it. We have to move on." And she was a really verbal kid. So I think she was probably like three, four, or five. I mean, very young, and just couldn't stop herself. And then she would ramp up higher and higher. Then she would start screaming. Then she would start, you know, getting like aggressive, but not toward us as much. Like she would kick the car seat, rock her car seat back and forth. I mean, so I think that's when I started to feel like I was getting a little out of control. And that was pretty early on.
So things escalated in terms of her behavior, outbursts, we're going to lump it under one big behavior issues umbrella. I mean, if there's anything that you think is specific that, you know, is helpful to bring up, but the fact is our kid could be having all kinds of different outlets, but it's just quote unquote unacceptable behavior.
Right.
Or
exactly.
Behavior that's stressful for everybody else around her.
Be around. Yeah. There was never a down moment of feeling like you could relax. Everything felt like charged, very charged.
And so when all of this was going on, what was your view of it? You know, right now I'm sitting here and I'm listening to it and I'm going, you know, this poor child, because yes, it was really hard to be around her and you couldn't relax. And she was having the same experience from inside her own body.
Right.
From what you're telling me about, this was like a compulsion from her. This was not her calculating and manipulating to get her way. This was just something like almost forced out from the inside. Did you
total impulse control? Yes, complete impulse control problem. I think that was maybe one of the things that became so dysfunctional so fast. You know, even in school, she was doing really well in school. And then suddenly her teacher came to me and said, "Just so you know, I'm noticing like she'll go to do a dance and she'll swing her arms around completely not thinking or trying to be malicious, but it might hit somebody's desk and the desk might fall over onto a kid. And then the kid's scared of my daughter," you know? So she ended up, as you know, I've heard you guys talk about before, having these labels put upon her that then she's living out almost because she's so feeling out of control and chaotic inside of her brain, which at the time I didn't understand. I really just was like getting upset with her all the time. I yelled a lot. I even spanked her at one point, you know, all things that I feel totally humiliated about right now. But during the moment, I was so at a loss. I just didn't even know what else to do.
Well,
and she was so young. I was freaked out by medication and, you know.
Yeah. Well, and I know I'm interrupting you here, but
no,
because
go for it.
This is why I say I appreciate so much that you will come on here and talk about that, because we have been there. I tell people, and it's parent regret, parent humiliation.
Yes.
I should have realized this sooner. There were signs that my daughter had major issues for probably over a year before we actually got totally cognizant of it and started going, okay, you know,
this is
a problem. We need to do something about it. And here we are starting to do things about it. But you don't know what you don't know. And
so true.
You don't understand what someone else is experiencing. Now, I had that more with my husband than with my daughter, he's on the autism spectrum, which we just found out in his early 50s. And
wow.
I've been married to this man for 27 years. And to have that shift of, you know, what he is going through inside his body, and to have that lens to look at him through, that perspective on why he says something or why he does something, I feel really bad about some of the demands I've made of him or my interpretations of things. You know, I feel terrible, but I didn't know then what I know now. And that's why I appreciate talking about this, because this is how I found out. Judy and right. her son sharing so candidly about what they were going through and had gone through is what helped me get a grip on what was happening with my daughter, to be able and to have some idea of, like, okay,
how to be proactive.
How can I be proactive and, you know, not freak out this, well, 20-something year old woman.
Right.
Because she's an adult and she can do whatever the heck she wants. And even with a kid, you can't make another human being do something. But so that's why I appreciate you. And I like that you're elaborating and saying, hey, you know, I yelled at her, I spanked her, because they looked like behavior problems to me.
And, you know, I really feel like at the time I had no concept of brain wiring being different and creating this kind of chaos that the kids really can't control themselves. It almost felt like a relief to me to find out how, you know, she may be different and how I might help her, how her brain was wired, because it felt like, oh my God, thank God. I didn't even care what the answer was. I just wanted one, because watching your kids struggle is just totally impossible, especially when they're so little and, you know, they can only verbalize so much. And then it's creating resentment in my marriage. And then I had two other kids and I was worried about them being exposed to this kind of like disruptive behavior. And, you know, it was just that, I think that probably was one of the biggest milestones for me, getting the neuropsychological evaluation done.
Well, so that was going to ask, what caused you or inspired you to reach out for some outside help? Was there a turning point or what happened?
You know, she started to struggle at school and she was able to make friends but could not keep them. She had this strained reaction, which was like very, again, a huge disconnect for me, where if she was rejected by someone at school, instead of being like, why would I want to play with them if they don't want to play with me? She would do the opposite and be like, you're playing with me, you know? And it was such a weird dynamic that I knew that was a little off. And then her teachers finally, you know, she was in a very fancy private school in New York, which, you know, I think they have a hard time suggesting evaluations, first because there is so much shame around it. And there ends up being a slight implication that the state and the city and the school need to pay for a more appropriate education. So there are all these kind of like bureaucratic ridiculousness that goes into play, I think, as to why they delay. But finally, when they pulled us into the room, and it was like my fourth or fifth time meeting with the principal and the psychologist and the teacher and all these people who are complaining about her behavior. And we're in the room, and finally my husband just goes, okay, can we just get rid of the elephant in the room? Somebody just tell us what we're supposed to do. Obviously, she is struggling. Help us help her. And they're like, we think you need an evaluation. And I was like, why didn't you tell me this 2 years ago? I mean, this poor kid has now gone through two more years of feeling terrible about herself. And I just could have gotten an evaluation so much sooner. And I wasn't afraid of it. I was happy to have information. I mean, information feels like power to me. And I just wanted to help her. So I think I was a little angry at the school for that. And once we got it done, I mean, my husband and I sat there with, you know, he's always acted like her father, her birth father really doesn't participate. And we sat there looking at her last page of the neuropsych, and the diagnoses were like, I mean, there must have been like 12 different ones, and each line item conflicted with the one before. And I just cried and thought like, oh my God, this poor little kid. How could she possibly, it makes me upset even right now, but just how could she possibly have been expected to function in a healthy way when her brain was so out of whack? I mean, she was so verbal, so you thought she was extremely smart, and she is, she's very, very smart, but all these other processing and executive functioning issues and, you know, her learning differences, like all of this just made it impossible for her to weed through it to be the normal, verbal, smart kid she was on the inside. And that just was heartbreaking. Oh my gosh. And talk about like a feeling of guilt. I think I really beat myself up after that.
And that's a normal parent reaction to do that. It really is. And I'm glad that you were able to move past that. You have a quote that I wrote down. And it says, I understand my daughter's angst, struggle, and disruptive behavior was coming from her internal strife, instead of the misconception that she was a bad kid.
Oh my God, that kills me.
I'm tearing up. You know, I'm having a hard time getting through it, and it's not my daughter, but it's so hard on them. It's hard on the family. It's hard on the parents. It's hard on everybody. So once you guys went, okay, we talked to some professionals, we got some evaluation done, we understand now what's going on physiologically with her.
Right.
Then what happened?
So at that point, she was still in the private school and they were shaming her for her behavior, which I think really ended up setting her up for the opposite of success. And it just got worse and worse, and she would try to hold it together during the school day. And then the moment she got off the bus to come into the house, she was just like a total animal. And it became extremely disruptive in our household. So, you know, we'd already had her in a therapist, but I started changing therapists and trying to find different alternative therapies, nutrition. We did sleep analysis. We did like that EEG thing that you have the ambulatory where it's 72 hours of being hooked up to these things. And finally, we tried medicine. And that was a really hard thing for me to kind of relent to. I just didn't understand how they could possibly know what developmental things might occur in a kid's brain who's taking medication at such a young age. Mm-hmm. So I was hesitant. We finally tried. She had some initial relief, which made me very hopeful. And then she started to downslide. And, you know, then they take you off of one and it's 3 weeks until her brain kind of calms down from the medication. So you're struggling with her to come off of it. And then they try something else, which is another 3 weeks that you're waiting until like, see if it works. And then it doesn't work and it's terrible again. I mean, one gave her insomnia for literally 3 months. I mean, that kid was sitting up just eyes open all night long for 3 months, which like killed me because I knew she needed sleep. Another one made her do like something very strange and like Tourette-ish, and that obviously wasn't right. I mean, she probably went through 7 or 8 medications and then ended up on Abilify. And, you know, that really is like the devil for me because she gained a ton of weight, which, you know, for a kid who was already self-conscious, that was just like the worst recipe. And I don't think it really helped her. I think, you know, they would give her a certain amount. She would gain some weight. Her body mass would change. And the only answer from the doctors was to give her more. And then she'd gain more weight. And then her body mass would change again and the effects would fade. And then they'd want to give her more. And at some point I was like, okay, I feel like I'm going crazy. How am I ever going to get her off of this? And I just can't keep ratcheting up her milligram dosage. It's ridiculous. Like I felt like I was just stuck in this wheelhouse of medication. And I really do think that kind of tipped her over the edge of not being able to control herself. She was about, I'm going to say second grade. At the end of second grade, we moved her to a more specialized school for behavioral issues and therapeutic programs. And she did well there for a year. And I think it was purely because of the empathy that the teacher showed toward her, exactly like what we're talking about. Like once you realized it wasn't really her fault, you know, there's such a different approach around a kid who's got a little miswired brain or differently wired brain. And their approach was so loving and nurturing and sweet that I think that was a real relief for her. But then she just couldn't escape her brain. And it started to just kind of close in on her again. And then the school was like, she's having a hard time again. I don't think this is the right place for her. And then she actually was the one that came to me. And I mean, I was like walking on eggshells every single day in my household. I was totally freaked out about what she was going to do next. It got to the point of like door slamming and thing throwing and screaming and terrible words and really nasty, mean faces to my husband and the other kids. Babysitters were quitting like craziness. And I was working at the time. So, you know, even going to work felt like a relief for me because it was a little less stressful. And then she came to me right around 10 and a half and was like hysterical and just screamed, "You have to help me, mommy. My problems have gotten too big and I can't control them anymore."
Oh my gosh.
And oh my God, it was so torturous. So for a 10-year-old to be that verbal about how terrible she felt inside just totally killed me. And I was already at a loss. So I really didn't know what to do next or who to turn to. And she came to me and said she couldn't control it. My heart just ripped into pieces. And we hired an educational consultant She told me, you know, I originally thought that we were looking for boarding schools. And then she started talking about this thing called wilderness therapy, which I'd never heard about before, which I also think is just bizarre because now that I speak to so many people, a million people have gone to do it. So why aren't we talking about it?
Well, I want to back up and go, what's an education consultant?
Okay. An educational consultant is someone that you hire that's like a third-party subcontractor who is not supposed to get kickbacks from any of the programs that they suggest for you. And you pay them a certain amount of money for placement. So they look at all of your kids' diagnoses and evaluations. They interview your kid. They interview you. And then they have been traveling around the country looking at programs and alternative therapies. And they kind of suggest something for you. But there's one placement that has a chunk of money attached to it. And then there's a second placement that has another chunk of money attached to it.
Okay. But so this is making suggestions to you, not just about a school, but about a therapy, a healing process, a skill learning process, something yes. that would actually help her, not just house her.
Right. There are mainstream educational consultants also that do, like, you know, the higher end private schools in New York that I know about. But in general, I mean, most of the parents that I talk to who use ed consultants are looking for something who's in a placement kind of way, like a treatment facility, a residential treatment center, a therapeutic boarding school, or a wilderness program.
Okay. Because, you know, a lot of that was new to me. I had heard of wilderness programs, but not the therapy boarding schools and some of those things until I listened to your podcasts. So
interesting.
Yeah. I'm like, really? You know, how could I not know? Especially with as much as we do, you know, in this
area. I know. Like, oh my gosh. This is your wheelhouse.
Yeah. So anyhow, okay, so you were working with the consultant and they suggested the wilderness camp.
They suggested wilderness. It sounded totally amazing, although, you know, your insurance does not cover it, so it's a little cost prohibitive. And there are some funds out there that are very helpful with families that can't afford it. And so, you know, I've actually funneled a million people through Saving Teens, which is a really cool organization. I was very freaked out by wilderness because she described it. It sounded great. And then she said, I wouldn't be able to see or speak to my daughter for 3 months. And wow. I was like, forget it, lady. That is not happening. She's 10. And I was envisioning having her go to a boarding school close by that I could go see her on the weekends and, you know, have her in my life as much as I wanted. And, you know, I didn't want to send her away. So,
well, you wanted to get her the help she needed. But as a parent, to totally let go and to, well, partially just, one, admit that we are no part of what they need, at least for a short period of time,
right,
would be really hard.
Oh my gosh. And that's one of the things that I talk about in the podcast. Like, she was already in such a state of disrepair. The idea of me not being there to kind of steward her therapeutic experience felt totally unnatural. And she was 10. So it wasn't like she was 16, 17, 18, you know, she was a baby still. And right. It did not feel physically natural for me to not be near my child.
But you did it. Ultimately, you guys decided this was the best thing for her and you found the means to do it. And she went. What I'm curious about is when she was there, mm-hmm. what did you and the family do? I mean, was this a time where you just kind of went to, well, what, I guess you didn't have a normal routine per se. Did you just go to your normal routine? Did you do something for yourselves? Did you do something different? How did you guys take that time?
Oh my gosh. Well, first, it's not as if your child goes to wilderness and you have zero idea of what's happening. You're working very closely with their therapist, the primary therapist, and they also have staff around them all day long who are feeding back to the therapist when they can't be with every single kid what's going on and what's happening, and they send you emails. So you are updated. You're just not having actual interaction. So it's not send your kid away and hope they come back a different kid. It's let's get the family system back on track while your daughter has the intensive therapy and self-reflection that she requires. So there's a ton of work that is involved. I mean, we went to family workshops. They teach you a whole nother way of communicating with your kid and how to understand them and really be a good listener, which I think is a huge piece of it for me now. Even listening when I don't feel like listening anymore because she's already said it 50 times, you know? So it was, and, you know, and the family level, it was the craziest experience for me to watch my other kids, because she had been such a squeaky wheel and she got all the grace, and they had kind of developed these very self-sufficient little independent personalities where they'd go off. I mean, my daughter was maybe three. She clearly could not read. She would go and disappear into her room for like 2 hours with a book and just sit there at the table and look at the pictures. And that breaks my heart too, because then I realized it was her self-soothing and her way to kind of like remove herself from the dysfunction instead of actual interest, you know?
Mm-hmm. And that's something else that we don't think about. When we have a child who's struggling, who we are struggling with, who's having behavior problems, academic, whatever, we don't think about how the rest of us are, we think about how we're affected in kind of a, that selfish way of, I want all this difficulty to go away. We
right.
don't think about how we're impacted on a deep level, and we don't think about the dysfunctional patterns
that
that contribute to the problem or that we create because of the problems.
Yes. There was so much undoing in the work that we had to do. And I mean, I'm still trying to undo some of it, because as a mother who is so, you know, I love my daughter so much, regardless, I feel like we kind of created a codependency where I would take on her emotions, trying to protect the rest of the family. But in reality, that's even more dysfunctional, you know? Mm-hmm. And so breaking those cycles still is hard for me. I still struggle with it. And then, you know, it was very hard in my marriage, and that was tough and also lovely, because when she left, we were able to kind of reconvene and understand if we really loved each other and wanted to stay together. And then my other kids just ended up getting my attention, and they blossomed into these like more vivacious individuals. And it was such a gift also. I mean, the wilderness piece is just so full and layered with tons of gifts that I could not be more grateful for that experience. I mean, I still speak to the therapist who helped my daughter, and it's 4 years later.
That's amazing. So after the 3 months,
yes,
what happened?
They do a very good job at kind of walking you through the steps. And truthfully, once you make the decision to send your kid or to bring your kid, depending upon, you know, their thresholds, everything felt really organic after that. So I just kind of trusted that we had made the right choice. And once I felt the kind of recharge of being without this force, I really felt confident that we were on the right path and that there was some sort of healing that was happening. And I just needed to kind of like you were saying, just kind of like fall into the experience and allow myself to be led through by these people who were clearly better navigators than I was. And so, you know, they go through phases. The one that she went to is called trails, but each letter stands for a different level of, you know, kind of ownership and accountability on your piece in the dysfunction, which was really huge because she never would have thought that she was a part of it before. And then once they get to a certain phase, they kind of tell you, I think your daughter might be ready to graduate in a couple weeks, and here are some choices of where we think she might go next or where she should go next. And then you kind of grapple with that, because for Violet, they suggested therapeutic boarding school. And truthfully, I couldn't even imagine being away from her any longer. And concurrently, I couldn't really imagine having the disruption in the house again. So it was very confusing. And you know, I liken it constantly to drug addiction, because it's like breaking habits, and you have this habitual cyclical behaviors that you go through within your family system, and you're trying to break them, but is 3 months really enough to break these crazy cycles that you've been doing for 10 years? You know,
right.
I didn't think it was. So we did agree to send her to therapeutic boarding school, and she went, and it was, again, another totally outrageous, amazing experience.
In a continuation at home of the family working on their social and emotional skills and communication skills.
Yes. And just really acknowledging that everyone has a voice, and, you know, no one's really wrong, and trying to hear people's feelings instead of reacting to behaviors. And we all learned so much. I mean, I learned so much about myself and just, you know, the errors and judgment that I may have made as to how to like have a great family. I think in my childhood, my parents were extremely loving, but they were also kind of chaotic. Like, and that's kind of how our family got off. Like, they'd come home and be like, yes, we're going to Disney World tomorrow morning, back and back. And I was like, woohoo! But my kids have the opposite reaction. They're like, what? We're going to the beach? It's Thursday, you know? So I think learning how to have structure, consistency, and holding kids accountable, and also trusting that they're capable of more than you may have thought originally. Those were really huge pieces for us.
Could you repeat those again?
Structure, consistency, and trusting that your kids are capable of more than you may have thought. Those were really pivotal pieces for us to take out of it.
And it's interesting to me because, in particular, the trusting piece.
Yes.
So much of an issue for all parents. Is an issue for parents regardless of whether their kids have a specific physical issues that they're dealing with, or, you know, chemical imbalances or whatever that they're trying to handle. We just
totally agree.
We have a hard time trusting that our kids can handle stuff. So I find that very interesting that is a key piece here.
Oh yeah, it was. At the end of Wilderness, when you go to like your kid's graduation, they ask you to sleep over for a night so that you can understand what your kid's been doing. And you know, there's no technology, no mirrors, no physical contact, and it's tons of exercise and self-sustenance. So they build their own fires, they make their own food, they clean up all their own stuff, they have to journal, they have the first hour of hiking. Every single day they hike 5 to 10 miles with their huge pack on their back, and then they clean up all their stuff and they organize their backpack all by themselves. And you know, she was still just 11 years old. So that's a lot for me to wrap my brain around an 11-year-old being able to do. And when you go to the graduation, they kept saying to me, if you find yourself doing more than your kid is doing, stop. Stop. Your kid can do it. They've been doing it for 3 months. And I was like, oh my God, what? She can wash out her water bottle and like make lentils? Okay.
Well, and my family camps. We tent camp. And not glamp. We tent camp. We cook our meals over fire. We go collect the kindling. We backpack. And
that's so nice.
And part of the reason we got into that is that is a place where everybody is better. And my husband certainly, yes, especially the backpacking, that was him who initiated that. And for our 25th anniversary, people are like, oh, what are you going to do? I'm like, I asked him to go backpacking because when he's walking in the woods, he can listen to me and focus on what I'm saying. And what I really want for my 25th anniversary is to have his undivided attention.
All attention, yes.
And the way I can get that is tromping through the woods. And I like tromping through the woods, so I'm good.
Yeah, but, I like it too.
You know, there's all the exercise, the getting outdoors. These are common things that we are all told, whether you are just doing self-care and mental wellness, or you're actually struggling with a mental health issue. These are basic strategies that we are all told to use. Get
oh my
outside.
Gosh, 100%. Nature.
Yeah. Connects with the soil.
Yeah. And
Judy went through burnout a little while ago, and she decided to not deal with the burnout so much. We dealt with the burnout. We went stripped down some of your work and went through all those logistic things to give her some time. And the way she chose to use that time was get outside and do some gardening. And we're like, duh, no wonder you feel so much better. You just spent, you know, how many days in connection with the earth? You know, you had your hands in the dirt. It physiologically changes your body.
I
love that reminder that, because not everybody listening is having a major issue or whatever, but even just the minor family skirmishes or the struggling with managing everyday life, with organizing things, those things all get helped by reducing technology, increasing time outdoors, and getting exercise.
I mean, I'm such an exercise junkie purely because I also have a pretty decent amount of anxiety. And if I do not exercise for a couple of days, I feel myself feeling so much worse. And, you know, nature and hiking, I've gotten totally into that too. My other kids love it also, even if they complain a little bit in the beginning. By the end, everyone is like so connected and together. And for my oldest, Violet, it really is taking all technology away. And just saying, like, you don't have to do anything but keep walking. And just be aware of your surroundings and be together with us. And it really is therapeutic.
Yeah. So you had told me that your family learned several pivotal strategies. Was one of them exercise or outdoor time by any chance?
I think we've always kind of been into exercise. So that wasn't such a strategy. I actually wrote some down so that I wouldn't forget.
Okay. Go for it. We want to know. Inquiring minds want to know, what are pivotal strategies to get
pivotal strategies that I have learned. First and foremost, I think, is the structure piece. I really think I always, I've never been good at having structure in my house. I still struggle with it, but forcing myself to be a little more structured throughout the day, even if it's a schedule or expectations for my kids or consequences and actually following through, that is a gift. It sounds like it's mean. It's not. It's the opposite. It is a gift. It's safety. It's stability. And it just allows the kids to not have to work so hard worrying about what's going to happen next because they already know. So that was a huge one. The other one that was really big for me was they consistently remind you to never react to your child with emotion, which if your kid is pushing your buttons, it's very hard. But another piece of it is that your kid does not necessarily need to know the answer, whether or not it's they want something or can they go somewhere or what's my punishment. You know, they don't necessarily need to know the answer when they ask you. So in the therapeutic boarding school experience, they would say, it's okay for your kid to live with the discomfort of not knowing. It's okay for you to walk away and to say, I'm going to come back to you in an hour with an answer to this. And then you have a much more contemplative, thoughtful response for them. And you can actually structure out in a, you know, much more cognizant way what's appropriate. And then you come back and you have a conversation without emotion, and it's much more effective. And then the kid also doesn't feel judged or shamed by you being like, what's the matter with you? You know,
right.
Frustrated or angry.
So the bottom line key when they're pushing your buttons is to take a deep breath and take some time for yourself.
Yes.
Rather than letting your emotions
right
become a runaway freight train.
Right.
Okay. Gotcha.
The other thing that I think is really huge that there's a funny one. They kept saying to me, for consequences, you just never should say anything that you're not going to follow through on. And I had a girlfriend when I was telling her about what we were going through and like how interesting it all was to me and how it really made me know what I was doing wrong in the past and how I can improve in the future. And she said, oh my God, I was just on the plane with my sister and we're going to Disney World. And she says to her son, who's freaking out in the seat, if you don't stop kicking that guy's seat, we're turning the plane around and going home.
Oh yeah.
It's like, clearly that's not going to happen. So always having something that you can follow through on as a consequence was obvious and huge. And then the last one is they taught us, as Violet was graduating from her therapeutic boarding school, and I was very nervous about her being home for 45 days. It seemed like a long time before going to her next school. They made us write out a contract, and the contract was not punitive in any way. It was more straight up making it very clear what the privileges and consequences were for not following the family contract. We had to come up with family values, which ours are kindness, helpfulness, respectfulness, and first time listening. And then there was, for each child, I even did them for my other kids. For each kid, there were expectations. You will do this every morning without complaints. You will do this every afternoon without drama. You will make sure that you're respectful and always use this kind of tone of voice. And if you are unable to do these, then you're quotes grounded, but that really means everything is put on pause until you complete these jobs. And they were all kind of like laborious jobs, which I thought was interesting. And they explained that the brain that has chaotic wiring needs organization, internal and external, to be able to function and hear what you're saying. And so I would have my kids do stuff like organize my books by color or organize their sock drawer by color. And once they were done, then they could have all their privileges back and they could take as long as they wanted to do it. But, you know, there was a very clear set of expectations, privileges, and consequences. And especially for Violet, she needed to see that written on paper. And then everyone signed it like a contract. And then, you know, you're good to go.
I like it. In fact, that was not exactly, but it was the conversation Judy and I had about getting our kids ready for summer. It was, you know, talk to them. What right. do you expect? What do they, you know, when they're older, what do they expect from their summer? What are they expecting from you? And all those kinds of things. So I really like these pivotal strategies for every family. This isn't yes. just for a family in crisis. These are strategies that help any family be healthy. So our conversation today, what kind of my big points that I got from it are, you know, we all struggle sometimes. And there are things that every member of the family does that contribute to the family dynamic. There may be a healthy contribution, there may be an unhealthy contribution. So we need to look at, we need to get curious and look at everything. Look at what's happening physiologically with our child if we have one who is having, who is really struggling, who's having behavior issues that it's making us crazy. And look at it and go, is there a physiological component here? Is there something going on that they need help learning how to manage, or they need some, you know, so for some people they do need a medication to help balance chemistry or whatever that is.
Right.
And at the same time, acknowledge that the whole family needs some help and some work. We need to work on our develop on our emotional and behavioral skill sets, on our mental wellness, and on our communication. But don't be afraid to reach out. Know that feeling guilty is normal, but not productive and not someplace we want to get stuck. So let that pass on by, and then use the pivotal strategies of structure, never reacting to your child with emotion, never give a consequence you won't follow through on, write a contract outlining expectations, privileges, and consequences. And if you are battling things and you don't know what else to do, definitely reach out for some professional help, which may be therapy and counseling. It may be an alternative thing. It may be a different school. It may be all kinds of different things, but reach out and look at what is available to you. Amy, for, you know, you have a podcast where you share so much more than this and share in great detail so much about your story. So can you tell people where they can hear the podcast and also your website?
Yes, thank you very much. It is called A Girl I Know, and the website is agirlinow.org, and it's also on iTunes and all the other podcast places. And I just want to applaud you guys also, because this is a huge piece of humanity, and being afraid to have a conversation about how you feel is just a total waste of time and not why we're here. So in order to, for everyone to be healthy, I think it's necessary to talk about. I really appreciate your guys' effort also.
And that's the community, right? Everyone who's here, you are a mighty parent. You're doing the work that you need to do to be the best parent you can be. So thank you for joining us on this journey and for being part of the community. And remember to visit mightyparenting.com to see all that we have for you. And we will see you next week.